It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 640. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me questions and suggestions for show topics at miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message on Skype. My name is Mike Tech Show, all one word. Follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MikeTechShow, and also facebook.com/MikeTechShow. This show is brought to you by Instant House Call. Remotely support your customers unattended and on demand through firewalls. Try it free by clicking on the link on my website at miketechshow.com, or you can go right to the website, instanthousecall.com. Use the promo code MikeTechShow when you're downloading your 15-day free trial. Also, this show is brought to you by Malwarebytes TechBench Toolset. This is the all-in-one package of utilities to help you diagnose, repair, and secure Windows PCs. It is my first go-to utility for all new systems and anything I work on, and it has been absolutely helpful in diagnosing hard drive problems. It will report on all the smart errors on a hard drive where you may not get that on other utilities. And that's just one teeny little feature. So you definitely want to try that out. Tonight's show, jam-packed with stories from the trenches and tips on some problems that I ran into with clients and the solutions. I also have some email for the end of the show. This is the last show before Christmas, so I want to take an opportunity here to just wish you and your family a happy holiday season, a Merry Christmas. I'll be back after Christmas. The plan is to do a Tech Vets next week. I couldn't do it this week because I lost my voice, and I still have some remnants of that, as you're probably catching here in the audio. And the next Mike Tech Show after tonight will be New Year's Eve show. I will be on at 10 p.m. Eastern time with a regular show. And then after that, I will hang in till at least 3 a.m. for a post show as we ring in the new year across all the time zones in the United States. So with that, yesterday was just such a busy day. My son and I, we were at a client that needed some new systems, and we ran into just so, not problems with the new systems, but they had mounted such a list of things they needed for help. It was great, and everything worked out and was resolved, but we were there a long time. We were there 7 hours, the two of us. Then we took a break, grabbed something to eat, and we headed to another client, and that's what this story's about. And I've mentioned this client before. My client's wife is a photographer. Matter of fact, has some books out with her photos. She takes hundreds of thousands of pictures. So we're not talking a couple. We're talking a lot. And they're not edited. They're just a natural picture. There's no editing involved whatsoever. So the big challenge is managing those photos. This is not a technical person. They have an iMac that has a 3 terabyte hard drive. They have MacBook Pros and other things. Matter of fact, we just got a new iMac that has OS X High Sierra. And here's the issue. She is still on an older version that has iPhoto. iPhotos became Photos in a different upgrade in the past. There was problems that she had seen in the new photos that she didn't want to upgrade. So haven't been upgrading. Her iPhoto library is 2 terabytes. My problem is trying to get her off iPhoto and into Photos or like Adobe Lightroom. But when you export from iPhoto, and I am not an expert on this, when you export, you do not preserve all of the directory structure. The only way that I've seen is you got to take all or nothing to keep all of the metadata and the structure and take that 2 terabytes and then get that loaded into Photos. That's crazy. How do I break down iPhoto but still maintain the metadata and all of the directory structure that was created? That's my dilemma. That's what I'm putting out there. If you can help me with this dilemma and dealing with 2 terabytes of storage, and this is not all of the photos, I'm going to be dealing upwards of 10 terabytes of photos. So because of this, I have to speak with someone about local storage that we can get to these fast. Maybe we got to look at Thunderbolt and different options. Here's what I need. Someone that can give me assistance that I can speak with. Please email me, miketechshow@gmail.com, and I will find a way to get you compensated or reward you somehow. I need some advice. I need some direction. Yes, I am going to reach out to Dave Greenbaum, who listens to the show. So, Dave, you're going to be getting a call from me. I'm going to need some advice here. So I need that Mac photo expert that deals with large, large files and a large library that I can properly break down. So that's my plea for help. And there's going to be another one later in the show here for some assistance on some other things. So this morning started out, my son came over and our cell phones lit up because some of our clients got the Windows 10 Fall Creators Update finally applied to their system and they rebooted. And when they came in this morning and fired up Outlook, Outlook no longer worked. They were all Outlook 2007. In a previous couple weeks ago, I mentioned about the Fall Creators Update breaking Mappy in Outlook and Office 2010. Now we see Office Outlook 2007 completely broken. It was absolutely the Fall Creators Update because we seen 1709 was just applied. The answer and the fix is you got to go to Control Panel, Programs and Features, right click on Office, select Change. When it comes up, pick Repair. Do a full Office repair. The answer to all these Office problems and Outlook problems is doing a full repair on Office, reboot, Outlook is fixed. So I'm glad we got the fix for this. So now this leads to another problem where I thought it was an Outlook issue. I get a call from a client that I work with, texts me that his Outlook is not working. He's not getting mail. And I thought, wow, I got the answer. This is another problem. I know he has Windows 10 on a small Lenovo tablet PC. When I get the machine, I notice he's using Outlook.com, not Outlook the program. So we got a different problem here. And as I investigate, no messages are coming in. And I'm not an Outlook.com web user. I go in to the settings and the options, and I'm starting to look, and his email is being forwarded to an account he has nothing to do with. It's his name misspelled by one letter. And I also find out that a lot of people in his address book yesterday received a fake Dropbox link that there's a file waiting, please log into your Dropbox account, that he did not send. And he started getting replies today from people, but via phone, because anybody that was replying, it wasn't coming in. He wasn't even getting messages on his phone. He quickly, before I was even called, he changed his email password, which is the first thing you got to do when there's an issue like this. When I get the system and start looking at his account online, I noticed this forwarding. And I also noticed that every inbound message was being deleted after it was forwarded. There were rules that he had not set up. And this forwarding, that means all messages coming in from his clients were being forwarded to this fake account. Does this sound familiar? If you remember me talking about someone I knew who had this happen with an AOL account, these are people that deal, first off, they shouldn't be dealing with Outlook.com and AOL, and we had the security conversation. They should be on an exchange-hosted server using encrypted email when they're communicating with their clients. Plain and simple. Here's the steps and what you got to do. If anybody starts receiving bad messages that they didn't send, you have to get online to the account. You must change the password immediately. Make sure then you can log back in and then start trolling and looking at all the settings for all rules, any forwarding, and then disable them and then test by sending some messages from another account and see that you're getting in. He's all up and running, but I also put him on the path where I'm going to migrate him. He does have a domain for a website, but he's not using it for email. So he's not taking advantage of the branding that he could be doing. Rather than using an Outlook.com email address, use your domain name for your email. So I'm going to set him up on Exchange, host it. We're going to add encryption. So when he's dealing with different information that should be secure, it will be done properly and he will be good. We also, I performed a deep cleaning and not just the normal battery of tests where I run Malwarebytes TechBench tool set and I adware cleaner. JRT's not around anymore, but guess what? I know they've sunset at JRT and adware cleaner's supposed to clean everything. I got to have a conversation with Malwarebytes because JRT is still finding things that adware cleaner is not. So I do want to pose that question. Guys, if you're listening, please weigh in on that for me. I appreciate it. And I'll share that with everybody. But we are seeing JRT pick up different things. I run Rogue Killer, and I also run Super Any Spyware. And Super Any Spyware finds several thousand, now, of course, adware cookies. But I want this deep cleaning because if anything, we don't know the genesis and root cause of where he picked up his email account being compromised. Not knowing that this is the only system he uses for email, for getting his email and checking it online, I wanted to make sure that we performed a very deep cleaning. So I ran everything on this afternoon and he's good to go, but that's pretty scary when you see that someone's not only taken over your email, but now it's being forwarded and they're going to be intercepting client correspondence. That's terrible. But I'm seeing this one letter change in a name and you want to be aware of that. Scan to network shares, scanning to email. Very common. I do it here at home. I have a couple printers here that I scan back to my desktops. We want to take the paper and make it electronic. That's the perfect solution. But I'm running into a problem, an uptick in this problem of scan to email. When you designate one account for sending via SMTP on the scanner, copier, multifunction device, and I noticed first now a problem with Comcast. It's very difficult. Comcast must have changed their security settings or something where we no longer can send from the Comcast account where it's being blocked. We're having problems. I've had problems with the Verizon account, and there's a whole list of issues there because it's now AOL. And what account are you using? I don't want a Yahoo account. I'm going to try Outlook.com. Is there a way to do a free email account somewheres that we can still send from devices like this? Because you don't want to use a personal account. You want to have some kind of a generic account. I'm going to use Gmail, but Gmail's getting tougher. See, the email providers, I'm glad they're starting to take security a little more serious, but they're also, because of that, they're making it tougher to be able to have automated notifications or automated scan to email. That's becoming very difficult. So I'd like everybody to kind of that's involved in this, weigh in on this. What are you doing? How are you resolving this? Are you using like an exchange hosted account and dedicating it to that? And that's what I'm getting to. At least that's where I'm heading. and start to maybe use a scans account at that domain. And that's probably the best way to do it. And this way we have the control. Then I run into this problem I was talking about in the pre-show. I was helping a client who sells copiers and multifunctions machines, Mac OS X High Sierra. That's 10.13. During that upgrade, they broke and stopped supporting FTP. I was doing as much reading as I could quickly tonight and found that since FTP is broken, they're using third-party software. Now I'm remoted into my client's client trying to help them, because once this user upgraded to High Sierra, FTP is broken, and that was the protocol being used when I looked at the copier admin setup. So I set up a share. It's pretty easy, and this is the right way around it. Go to preferences, turn on file sharing under sharing, and then you can create a directory anywhere on the system, add it to the shared, and then what accounts would you like to add? So I add his main account as the full read and write privileges. Then I go to the copier and I set up the SMB path back to that. So the easiest way is, if it's a static IP address, which this is, you just put the IP address slash the share, which I made scans, and then you got to authenticate. You got to put the full username and their passwords. So you got to make sure you know the password. That was it. Set it up, took a couple minutes, and fixed the problem by using the network share connection, but not FTP. Two more issues before I get to email. How to resolve an issue where all Windows 7 desktop icons have become blank. Ran into a desktop where you had just the blank default icon for everything on the desktop. That means the icon cache file has got corrupted or damaged. And I have a link that will be in the show notes that when you go to that, it will describe how to find that file, delete it, reboot. It'll recreate that, and all the icons come back. Little Googling found that out. I have another link. A client, again, multifunction machines. They just got some new Konica Minolta BizHub devices. And I don't know why, but the vendor didn't properly configure all the drivers. And every time a couple users would print, they would get that error message that read the white background is on and you need to turn it off. And it's a very annoying message. And no matter what you answer to this question, it will continue to come back. The next link I have in the show notes is where you go into the driver settings to turn off. It's literally just a checkbox to remove white background. You uncheck it, click apply, make sure, and then okay, and start backing your way out of the driver. Also, make sure that any documents that were already open to print, close the application, and then open up the application again, then open that file, then do a test print, and you will not be prompted with this annoying box. It didn't stop the printout from happening. It was just an annoyance, but it was happening with a couple of the users. And so I was able to just remote in, uncheck that option. And I wanted to share that in case that helps you with problems from clients, or if something happens where you're like, I remember that. There's an option in there. We can just quickly check that. So last show, and I got a bunch of emails and I want to thank everybody for this. The last show, I talked about trying to remove Bitdefender. And one of the things that I have it sort of disabled, and like I said, halfway removed, I got a little further on this where I got it to where Revo Uninstaller could see some of the registry and some of the things, and I was able to remove all that, but the service is still there, and I can't stop the service from running. So here's some good suggestions that I haven't applied yet, and some questions. This is from Mark. Did you ever figure out how to fully uninstall Bitdefender? And my answer is no. If not, is it the old version with the pale red icon or the new version with the bright red icon? Good point. I think it's the bright red. I've got an idea on how to uninstall it if you haven't figured it out yet. I am curious on why you are uninstalling it. Is it because of the recent website blocking issue? No, it's actually, I want to give Windows Defender for Windows 10 a better look at what it is doing in combination with Malwarebytes Premium. And I just got annoyed with Bitdefender one day and wanted to get rid of it, and it just won't go away. There wasn't a technical reason why I was getting rid of it except for wanting to do more testing of Windows Defender. Mark, please send me what your idea is. I wish you had included it in the email. This is from Adam, and I like this. I appreciate all your podcasts you put out. Keep up the great work. One trick I have found for removing broken uninstalls of software, reinstall it if possible, then use Revo Uninstaller to do a full removal. I am going to try that because I want to get the service removed, because now Windows Defender will not work and I don't have Bitdefender. So I'm in a kind of a funky state here. I think that's a great idea, which is reinstall the software and then try to do maybe even the natural removal using the Bitdefender remove first. So I have a feeling I'm going to be installing Bitdefender a couple times to get the right combination that's going to fully remove everything. So let's see if that happens. And of course, before I attempt this, I'm going to create a restore point so I can quickly go back to that in case things get really ugly. This is from Austin, who also recommended that, I don't know if you've tried this already, but you can download the latest version of Bitdefender free and repair it. Or if you are lucky, the setup may give you the option to uninstall it. I like that idea. I think I'm going to try to see if it wants to repair it, then try the uninstall. And if it doesn't, then just try to go through. Let's see if I can kind of fake it out to kind of do a whole install and then try the Bitdefender remove utility and then also Revo again. It shouldn't be this difficult to remove a piece of software. It really shouldn't. How do typical users have a prayer? Some of the things I've been running into this week, like with the mailbox, the email account being compromised, this ridiculous uninstall problem, the problem with Office being broken. You mean Microsoft broke Outlook with an update? I mean, they didn't regression test their Fall Creators update with previous versions of Outlook that the whole world's using? That makes no sense. And then the end users left with that. And their only recourse is people like us who do this for a living, where we go into the trenches, we figure out the solutions. And one of the reasons I do this show is sharing these things with everybody, people in the business and out of the business, you know, regular, typical users. Final email. And this is from Kate. I like her comment here. In show 638, you mentioned that everyone should have the full version of Adobe so we could create PDFs from web pages. Congratulations on running a business so successful that you have all the extra money lying around. For the rest of everyone, including me, it's easy and free to use the Microsoft print to PDF feature built into Windows 10. By the way, I have never used that feature. This works with every application that you can print from, including any browser. To do this from any application, click on the file, print, and select Microsoft print to PDF. I've attached a PDF of your website that I created this way. That's all there is to it. No expensive programs, no browser extensions, just a capability built into Windows 10. I'm sure there must be other reasons to add an expensive suite of bloatware, but creating PDFs isn't a reason. I do editing, maybe. I do create forms for clients, and I have clients that are deeply rooted in Adobe Acrobat Pro. So I have to know about that to assist them, not only with questions, but lots of editing of the PDFs, building forms, there's a few advanced features that I have to be aware of. So yes, there is another reason why I do it. And you're right. I kind of carelessly mentioned, boy, everybody should just have Adobe Acrobat because that's one of the great features I like with the add-in there. But remember, I was doing that pre-Windows 10. So in Windows 7, I had that functionality built right into the extension of my browsers because I've always had Adobe Acrobat. I never upgraded to 11, excuse me, to Adobe Acrobat DC because now they want that monthly fee for the rest of your life where you rent the software, you never own it. I have the last shipping version of the full version Adobe Acrobat 11 Pro. I don't know how long that's going to be useful to me, but that's my version. And I will say this, I have successfully installed anybody that has Adobe Acrobat Pro 9 will install and work. I've had to do that for some clients that they own that. It will work under Windows 10. She continues, thanks, Mike. Merry Christmas and all the best in 2018. Kate, I wish you the same and your family. Thank you for being such a long listener of the show and always contributing. I really, really appreciate that. And all of you, thank you so much for contributing to the show and making this show successful. It's your input that really helps. From the bottom of my heart, I really deeply, deeply appreciate it. This being the last show before Christmas, I think I missed it one year. It might have been last year. I always play my favorite Christmas song and include it in the show. Tonight is no different. This is my favorite Christmas song. Please give a listen to A Christmas Canon by the Trans-Siberian Orchestra, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
Thank you.
was A Christmas Canon by the Trans-Siberian Orchestra. I hope you enjoyed it. And again, I wish all of you happy holidays, a very Merry Christmas, you and your family. And I will see you back here New Year's Eve, Sunday night, December 31st at 10 p.m. for the final show of 2017. Thank you for all of your support, downloading, and staying subscribed to the show. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.